M20. Number 2A.
Now we come to the question, now what really constitutes the structure of the textbook? And I can answer this question only very, very, very superficially, and I think in a few minutes, and I'm sorry to say that perhaps these few minutes will be the most difficult ones to follow for most that are here, because you don't know so much the system of Christian Science yet. Yes. The textbook has 18 chapters, but the last two chapters, or actually there's even 18 chapters, the last two chapters are actually added, as she says, that namely the glossary and fruitage. So that the first 16 chapters constitute really the body of the textbook as the structure of the science of being. So when I talk about the structure, then I mean those chapters that run from the first chapter, prayer, to the 16th chapter, apocalypse, and then glossary is added, it's an appendix, and fruitage is anyway not a teaching of the subject itself. Now, how is the textbook built up? How are these 16 chapters built up? Well, I have told you that there is an underlying system in the textbook, and that underlying system is constitutes of three main categories: the seven synonymous terms, then the four sides of the holy city, the operational sense, and then the level of science, the dimensional sense of science, science, divine science, absolute Christian science, Christian science. So these three categories constitute the system. And Mrs. Eddy presents now these 16 chapters with the overall concept of the four ways of operation, namely Word, Christ, Christianity, Science. This is the overall layout of the chapter. She shows, therefore, the first four chapters from the standpoint of the Word, and the next four chapters from the standpoint of the Christ, the next four chapters from the standpoint of Christianity, and the next four chapters from the standpoint of Science. Could you follow me that way? Huh? Yeah. I said the next few minutes will be the difficult one. Then we know, see, that in being, everything reflects each other. Can you say each other? Yeah? That there is an infinite reflection, that these categories never are put into watertight compartments, say, here is one category, and here is one category, and there is one category, but they all intertwine and blend with each other. Therefore, we see as the next question, why does Mrs. Eddy use four chapters each time to explain those four big sides of the holy city? Is the sound proper? Does it sound proper in the... There's... Yeah, it sounds perfect. Yeah, everybody hears? I heard some...
There's a little resonance coming back and
forth. Yes, occasionally. Thank you. All right. Now, I said, why four chapters for each side of the holy city? Well, even the Bible already shows that these four sides of the holy city reflect each other through the gates. In each side are three doors opening so that one can see all other sides of the holy city. So Mrs. Eddy presents, therefore, each side of the holy city in its four different reflections. So the The first four chapters are actually the Word in its own aspect. Second, the Word reflecting Christ. Then the third chapter, the Word reflecting Christianity. And the fourth chapter, the Word reflecting science. You just can't peep through those doors in the Holy City and see the other side of the Holy City. So that each side is always presented in the reflection of all the others. That makes 4 times 4. And you can see the very systematic layout and symmetrical layout of the chapter. You know, Mrs. Eddy says, what is the form of man as idea? She says, he's wholly symmetrical. And I said, the textbook is the idea, as the idea of being is our form, is our being, so that in a symmetrical way, the idea man, as the idea of the textbook, is really representing this 4x4 reflection. So you have here the first category stated as an overall grid you lay on the textbook. Is that clear? A grid? You lay on the textbook and say, here you have a 4x4 grid. You lay on the 16th chapter, and therefore each chapter therefore shows you a different aspect of that holy city. Then, if you take each chapter, a chapter per se, a single chapter, that chapter itself has again a layout, a structure. So I come to each chapter, and you will see that Mrs. Eddy builds up each chapter according, again, to a definite pattern. Say, mostly she will build it up through the other category which we have, namely the 7 synonymous terms. And we'll build up the chapter, say prayer, build it up first, that it first shows the subject of prayer from the standpoint of mind, then afterwards from the standpoint of spirit, then of soul, and then of principle, and then of life, and truth, and of love, and that's the whole order. In this way you can see why then, if we know the synonymous term, we understand the flow through a chapter. So easy, The moment you know these categories, then your consciousness gets hold of the spiritual flow of a chapter, and you read, say, there, the chapter, the prayer from the standpoint of mind, then of spirit, then of soul. And then naturally she even goes further, because each synonymous term reflects every other synonymous term. She will present this chapter on prayer not only as a sevenfold ordered reasoning, but always each term in its 7 reflections. So you get the 7x7, 49 aspect on prayer. Very easily, once you know the synonymous term, you can read it just as you read a novel. But without knowing the synonymous term, you will never read. You never understand what is in the chapter. And so she goes from one chapter to the next, and in each chapter you have a certain layout that is laid out according, you see, to these categories. She has chapter. She lays out with the 7 synonymous terms. She has chapters that she lays out according to the 4, like the platform of Christian Science. She shows this the 4x4. She can, recapitulation there also. The layout is according to the 4, again within itself. And so she can, according to the subject, vary how she lays out the subject. But it's always according to the fundamental categories of being. Did I make that more or less clear? I mean, you don't know what it means, but I mean, you can see that that there is a terrific sense of order, of spiritual sequence, and of logical spiritual sequence in it. Yeah, so, naturally, this is not the time to show you what is the content now of each chapter, the content of the structure. There I have to refer naturally to the more elaborate statements and presentation of the subject, the smallest or the shortest, not the smallest, the shortest presentation you have in my book called The Structure of the Christian Science Textbook, Our Way of Life. In that book I present in a very overall way the main ideas that run through the whole textbook, how spiritually one chapter follows the other, the next chapter, how spiritually within the chapter the subject runs through the seven synonymous terms. It's a verbatim report, more or less, of a weekend talk that I gave some 25 years ago. And it's still, I would say, the best and clearest presentation in a short way. Next to that, naturally, when one wants to investigate it deeper, and one has to investigate it much deeper, then one comes to a presentation that surpasses the possibility of a written statement. There we have tapes on it, and that takes these chapters slowly. I start, as Joel said yesterday, in 1956 with the first chapter, and in between I have come up to the 10th chapter. Next summer school here in America, I will take the platform, the layout of the platform. You know, the platform has always been some kind of an enigma to most students, because the teacher's class, it must be taught from recapitulation plus the platform. And if you have a teacher, if you are class taught, ask your teacher, what contains that platform? And you listen what he tells you. What is so big about that platform that is taught in the teacher's class and not in the primary class? I don't think you will get really... I better shut up at this moment. So I will show you how that platform has a wonderfully systematized, balanced layout of the 4 times 4. You see again the categories of the 4, plus that it presents that subject from the aspect of divine science and absolute Christian science each time. That's why there are not 4 times 4, 16, but the double of it, 32 statements in it. It's an exquisitely balanced presentation of Word, Christ, Christianity, science, reflecting each other, both from the level of divine science and from Christian science. And that's an absolute Christian science. That's why it is a higher teaching than recapitulation, because recapitulation only teaches from the standpoint of absolute Christian science and Christian science, and not of divine science. Oh, that's a side remark, but that I will going to teach, the platform, some objections answered, and the chapter on practice. And then next year I take the next two chapters on teaching and recapitulation, and then in another year I take Genesis and Apocalypse, and in this way I finish up the textbook, which seems to be my life mission in this world, to open up the structure of the textbook. The former chapters up to the 10th chapter, they are all taped, but it's a big job. They contain about 180 hours talk, and until I finish the textbook it will come up to about 270 hours or so. So it's a big job, it's a life job. But it's showing how Mrs. Eddy presented really the science of Christian science. Yes, so you can ask me and say, but why hasn't that seen before? Why hasn't anybody seen it before? There are millions of Christian scientists that have lived since Mrs. Eddy's time. They were earnest, very in earnest, devoted. There's certainly no question about that. And so the question always comes up, well, why hasn't it been seen before? Why hasn't somebody else seen it? That's always the question. Why did Mrs. Eddy discover Christian Science? Why not the Pope? He would be the right man to do that, because he's the man that governs Christianity. So why didn't the Pope discover Christian Science? Why a woman? Why Mrs. Eddy? Why not somebody else? Well, you can't give an answer. You can just say it has happened. And it happens to those, naturally, usually, who have a certain transparency for a certain question. And in my life, this was always right from youth. My one question, what is the science in this textbook? And so perhaps a lot has fallen on me that I have had the grace and get to know John Dorley, who really gave us the elements, gave us the tools of science with which afterwards we could open up decode, so to say, the textbook and see what is in it. Also, one also must see that the new idea we have seen yesterday, that Mrs. Eddy foresaw the advancement of the idea, that there will be an advancement of the idea. One always has to see that the time must be ripe for something. Before the time is not ripe for something, it doesn't happen. Just doesn't happen. And the time was not ripe before. I mean, only now one feels that the time becomes ripe for a progressive idea to break through. And so the forerunners an age, they always have to go through the wilderness experience. They have to go down to Egypt and be unknown and nurture the idea until the idea is ripe. But it looks as if the idea, the time will be ripe. That this is now the time where a progressive idea will be accepted. Another point why the time was not ripe was, I would say, that the Christian scientists had much too much religious sense of Christian Science. And because they had a religious sense of Christian Science, a religious sense can never see science. Religious sense can only see religion. Only a scientific sense can see science. And as long as the religious sense was predominant all over, and one always was talking about the religion of Christian Science, then naturally consciousness is not ready to accept such a step. But foremostly, that which enables really a student to decode the textbook, I think would be two factors. The one factor is really that the textbook is not written in English, that the textbook is written in the language of spirit. And second point is that the student usually is not familiar with text interpretation. I want to talk about these two points quickly. First, about the language of spirit. You see, we have here an interesting situation. If you read a novel, we have said we can read it through diagonally and we know what is in the novel. It's very easy. Why? Because the novel is written in the human language which we speak and in which we are brought up. The textbook is written in the language of spirit, and we have not been brought up to understand and to speak and to hear the language of spirit. That's why I said the textbook is not written in English, nor in German, nor translated in German. English text is only what the linguists say, the surface structure of the message, whereas the deep structure, what the linguists call the deep structural language, is actually the language of spirit. And so, as long as we read the textbook in English or in any other human language, we cannot understand it. And we try very hard to understand it, but we can't. That's why, you see, they say, well, this book is written in a disordered way, without order, without any line of reasoning, because they read English. They don't read the spirit, the spiritual sequence. And so one can understand very well these critics, which I have quoted before. You remember? Because they still read in English and therefore use the English language and the connotation that the English terms have and read it that way. Whereas Mrs. Eddy wrote the textbook as the language of spirit, translated in order to give an inkling of what is meant with it, translated into English. Remember how Mrs. Eddy says that English, as all other languages, is inadequate to the expression of spiritual conceptions and propositions. She says it is inadequate. So, as long as we read the textbook in English, we cannot understand it. Because one is obliged to use material terms in dealing with spiritual ideas. If we don't know the spiritual language, therefore the order in spiritual ideas, therefore structure of spiritual ideas, not the structure of sentences and English terms and so on, until we don't know that spiritual language in its order and in its connection, we cannot read the language of spirit. She says that syntax was spiritual order and unity. This is what she says. That syntax is not English. It's not English. It's not English grammar. And therefore we cannot reason according to English grammar when we read the textbook. We have to see that true syntax in the deep structure language, syntax, is really spiritual order and spiritual unity. And before, can you hear? And order and unity demands relationship, recognizing and understanding relationship between values, between spiritual values. So we need a completely different language. You have to learn, I know American people don't learn another language, huh? We have to learn it. I have to speak at least four languages in order to get through. But you have to learn a new language. Thank God, huh? Namely the language of spirit. How can we learn the language of spirit? This is the great thing, you see. And this is what happened, you see, as I showed you yesterday, that was happened, that the moment one begins to investigate the seven synonymous terms, which stand for God, which stand therefore for reality itself, that if one begins to investigate therefore the synonymous terms, you investigate no more a human term, because mind with a capital M is something very different than mind in the dictionary, in the Webster, and spirit with a capital S is something very different than spirit in your Webster dictionary. It has a spiritual connotation, and it has a spiritual meaning and a spiritual definition which is completely different from any other meaning of that term. And therefore through the culturing of the synonymous term and the characteristics that make up really each synonymous term, you get the spiritual language. You don't get the letter alone, you get the spirit of it. And that, so that finally you hear the spiritual language of mind, spirit, soul, principle, life, truth, love, you get the spiritual language of it, of which these English terms are only symbols. They are only symbols, they are not reality per se. And you begin to hear the spiritual language, and then when you read the textbook, you read it in a spiritual language. Quite something different. So, through the study that you will undertake, I hope, of the synonymous terms, you learn the language of spirit. And that language of spirit sees order in the textbook, where all these other critics outside of the Christian Science movement, inside of the Christian Science movement, do not see order. Because syntax is spiritual order, and not humanly logical order of English terms. Yeah. The other point I was saying is text interpretation. This is a terrific subject, one of the most beautiful subjects in the study of Christian Science and of the textbook. I try to explain quickly what it means, only quickly, and one is always in a very bad situation if one has to explain something very big, you know, in 5 minutes. One can be misunderstood or not understood at all, and then one has all the critics coming back. So, well, that's what I have to suffer, but I try. I try, perhaps in a very common, usual way to explain it. You see, we are used to read a text, to read a text from left to right, don't you? We are not Jewish, huh? We read from left to right. And we read it from the first line on the top right down to the bottom. We read it, or from your side, we read it like this, huh? Like this. Which means that we can say we read a text as if the subject presented would have only one dimension, namely that linear dimension, that linear flow. It's only one dimension flowing. One calls that in literature, one calls that diachronic. A diachronic, it flows in time, you see, along the line. It flows one line. It's linear. It's a linear, and our thinking, as we have been educated, is linear too. We always think linearly, from one step to the next, from one concept to the next. Well, this is really an education we had, which is quite right for the people down in Africa, for the Zulus and so on. This is not really a culture thinking, that we can only think diachronically, along a line. But that's how the books are written. And you read a novel, and it's diachronically. You read it nicely alone. And it must make sense when you read it alone. Yes? Must make sense. Must be logical. It is, as a comparison, like a melody that I hum. If you sing a melody, you can only sing a one-voice melody.